everyone. Welcome back to Deeper. It is truly just a joy to be back in the studio. It is a new year. We had 2 weeks or so off for the holiday season and for a lot of traveling, and it's just been a lot of crazy, but I'm so excited to be here again and starting to get back in the swing of things. Dan, it's so good to have you back here to start the new year up and running. I freaking love this sermon you gave on Sunday. I love this topic. We'll get into a little bit more about why I love that so much later, but I guess without much more preamble, what did we talk about? What's this series on? What did Sunday start?
Yeah, so happy 2024, Austin, yes. And anybody out there listening who I maybe haven't talked to, but yes, so starting a new year, we were talking about what do we kind of dive into, and we had some specific, you know, books of scripture we were looking at and all these things, and you know, with Tim taking his call to Egypt, I think it helped kind of point me in this direction to think about, you know, transitions and anxiety that comes up. And I happened to be in Chicago in November to baptize one of my nieces. And they were doing a similar series talking about anxiety and that. And it really triggered in my mind that this is very relevant. This is something we're dealing with in different levels for all of us. And so we started that this week. We're going to do a 3-part series on anxiety, Philippians 4:4-9. Which is famous for a few different reasons. It starts with rejoice in the Lord always, but in the heart of it talks about not being anxious for anything or anxious for nothing, which is what we titled the series, but with a question mark. And this week, as we kind of broke out the 3 weeks, really wanted to name that we live in an anxious reality, that anxiety is something that we deal with. It's not something just because I'm a Christian that I can be immune from in this world. But also, we pointed out, not something we want to be driven by or something that overwhelms us. And so we talked a little bit about some situations. Paul mentions, you know, don't be anxious about anything, but in every situation, take your prayers and requests to God. And in mind, then, that there are situations that make us anxious. And so we talked about what are some of those, and we used 3 T words, transitions, threats, and turmoil, to talk about that. So we went into those a little bit and just ended by saying that is a reality in this world, but there is another reality that has come in on top of that, and it's the reality of God's kingdom and coming now in Jesus Christ, and how that is the lasting reality we need to remember even as we deal with our anxiety. So a bit of an overview. It's a big topic, so we wanted to break it up over a couple different weeks. But important.
Very important. And relevant. Well, and I'm really excited for this because I was a psychology major back in college. And so, you know, this is the big thing, you know, is mental health. How do we treat mental health? How do we treat mental health as Christians is a very specific and unique discussion that we had. One, I actually really appreciated you starting out the sermon by saying, hey, if you have anxiety, you need to go see a professional. Like, it's good we're talking about it now, but go talk to someone else who's properly trained and certified for that. I really appreciated that and wanted to highlight that because there's several different series of thought and research out there as far as Christians and Christian counseling and how do you do that well. And one of the things that popped up a lot in the research that we talked about was, you know, if you're a person of faith and you need counseling, for one, you need professional help from a certified psychologist. Like, that is really important. And you shouldn't exclusively just talk to a pastor or just try, you know. Similarly, if you're a person of faith, you really need spiritual guidance and input. And not, I think the way that they phrased it was, you can't heal the brain with just a Bible and you can't heal the soul with just therapy. And I just was wondering what your take is on that perspective.
Yeah, that's good. It's kind of this kind of holistic kind of approach to health. And we talk about that with our physical bodies, and it's true emotionally, spiritually. And one of the good points, too, and like we said, we started out the sermon series that way, especially talking about chronic anxiety. You know, more of this is crippling in my life. And there's not just, you know, I talk to the pastor and I feel better now. And so there's some of that identification of it's just, you know, I'm in a particular moment right now and I'm dealing with some of that, and maybe I'm acting out of that a bit. Well, that might take one form of care, but there's more serious significant forms of this too. Mm-hmm. And that is going to take more expertise. You know, might be medication, you know, more well-rounded, holistic care. And, you know, that's true too. I mean, there are spiritual needs that can be helped through counseling. And there's, I was trained by a pastor who is also a counselor and who specialized in, you know, bringing out those spiritual aspects specifically in the counseling sessions. And so, you know, from a spiritual side, I might direct someone, even as a pastor, to further care because there's times where it's more than I'm really qualified to help with. And I think part of it, too, I understand as a starting point, someone might be more comfortable talking to me and just saying, hey, I deal with anxiety. Pastor, I know you. Let's talk about it. And that might give me an opportunity, as we have some discussions, to point them to further care. Even. And so there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think for a lot of us growing up and maybe a little bit an older segment especially who might be listening, the thought of counseling was still kind of, well, that's not for us in the church. You know, that's kind of, and so there's still some of that in maybe some of our minds. And so maybe we need to just start at least having the conversation within the church and then it opens us up to further healing opportunities with counselors.
And that's one of the things I'm so hopeful for about this series is that this will start conversations around mental health in churches. You know, when I decided I was going to go and study psychology, someone told me that I was actually going to be studying Satanism. Because, you know, and again, that was part of their generation and their experience. But like for me, man, I see the Christian need for mental health as so key. And so Jesus talks all over about this, and obviously we talked about that a lot here. So I'm so excited for this series. This is going to be really good. You said at one point that life in the world is not anxiety-free, but it doesn't need to be anxiety-driven. That was a really good explanation of the passage. I really liked that. And I immediately had a question come from that. What are some common spiritual pitfalls people can experience when we're being driven by anxiety rather than simply living with anxiety as a reality? Are there common misinterpretations or misapplications or things that you've noticed when someone is living an anxiety-driven life?
Yeah, there's probably not just one thing that always comes up, but most of the time, if I look at myself when I've been anxious and maybe especially it's heightened, it affects my character. When the people I'm around and close to, I'll be shorter with them. I'll say things without thinking. Maybe I'll be a little meaner or nastier. We just act outside of ourselves because, yeah, that anxiety, that fear, it's just driving things. And we're almost in self-protect mode. You know this from talking about anxiety. I mean, there's a reason we get anxious. It's a self-protective.
Yeah,
there's a lot of times we need that response to protect ourselves. And so we end up doing that, though, maybe in cases where that's not necessary. And so I might end up coming after you, you know, verbally, you know, in a very strong way when there's no need to do that. You're not actually threatening me, and it's just, you know, I'm feeling threatened or, you know, I'm really anxious about this change that we're going through. And so I lash out at my wife, even though she's not even the one driving the change. But I just need to, you know, I'm not realizing maybe I am anxious and it's going to come out. So I think primarily we start acting outside the character of Christ. And that can look a lot of different ways. We just gave some examples, maybe verbally or
Look into the fruit of the Spirit, almost. If, you know, the way you're acting stops resembling love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, there may be some anxiety driving that.
Yeah, you get more of the list being looked at before there, right? And, you know, it's interesting. I just was listening to a different podcast, not even a Christian one. It was actually a sports one I was listening to, but someone was there who had dealt with anxiety chronically in their life, and their solution was drinking, and very honest about it, and how that, you know, that worked for a time, and it was just to avoid the anxiety. I just didn't want to think. I could just stare at the wall, and those kind of things that we go to as solutions also have repercussions, right? And they affect us, and so that's another output. We start acting in ways like those lists we look at, like, well, I'm not going to get, you know, be suddenly become sexually immoral or, you know, start drinking too much, or But that's the things we start going to when anxiety is driving, because we got to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good point of seeing some of the ends that we go to. And if you look at Galatians 5, there's a good contrast, like you mm-hmm. said. Here's the fruit of the Spirit. Here's the fruit of something else driving the car.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved how you framed these three causes of anxiety, because they're pretty much spot on. And at least in my undergrad, we talked about it basically boiled down to these three things. There's a few others out there. Sure. But I really appreciate that. So we, talking a lot about transition, turmoil, and threats. And actually, if anyone who's listening would like, we actually did an excellent interview with Michelle Phoenix. Mm. She's an author. She's a speaker. One of the people I look up to the most. And we talked about transition over a year ago on the Amplify podcast, mm-hmm. so I'll actually put a link in the show notes. But transition is an incredibly potent source of anxiety, no matter mm-hmm. whether it's a quote-unquote good or bad.
Right.
I could talk for ages about this. So then, Dan, for this case specifically, I'll direct us to the early church.
Sure.
Because you pointed this out, and I just thought it was fascinating, because the early church had its first real brush with structural transition with, how it was organized and structured mm-hmm. when the Gentiles started leading churches. And you commented on that. And Paul had to really write back to Jerusalem and be like, hey, guys, like, there is no difference between Jew or Greek, slave or free, male or female, for we're all one in Jesus Christ. Like, he had this strongly worded, like, hey, you guys, this ain't it. This is a stressful transition. I get that. There's a lot of things changing, but we need to be aware and move mm-hmm. forward. And I just marvel at the way that in a lot of ways we are still in the exact same place where we've seen the church historically struggle with the exact same structural transition fear there. I mean, you can look at the issue of women in office that Friendship's dealing with now. You can look at the way churches in the South refuse to ordain black pastors for decades, or the Catholic Church historically not letting anyone who didn't speak Latin even read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had to be ordained to even own a copy of the Bible. And that's, obviously something we're like, eh.
Sure, in hindsight.
But, this fear of change and structural transition is evident throughout the church from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm just wondering, how did the church, especially the early church, but also just the historic church, get over its reluctance to change its structure? How did it overcome this transition anxiety?
Hmm. Yeah, in some ways, as you're pointing out, we deal with this every generation. So we always have to learn it again. One thing, as you look at like Acts 15, and the council there of Jerusalem, when this issue of Gentiles coming in, and how do we go about this massive change, this, especially culturally, it's totally different
backgrounds. It was a racial thing. It was a socioeconomic thing. Yeah. Like, the entire identity of who they were was changing right there.
One of the big things is having leadership that can step back, right? Mm-hmm. If in that case, those speaking at that council, whether it was Peter or James or Paul and Barnabas, were leading out of their anxiety, well, then everybody else just becomes more anxious. There's a lot in that's not in Acts 15 that you kind of read between the lines. It wasn't all just easy. There was, I can't remember the word that's used there, but there was some sort of spirited or vigorous discussion, right? I mean, what did that look like? So it wasn't simple. And it didn't just end there either, but you see how the leadership of James and Peter and kind of being able to step back and look at the big picture of what God is doing. That is huge, too, to see, all right, we're dealing with some details here. They're important right now. We need to figure this out. But look at the big picture. And James quotes, I think, from the prophet Amos there and saying, like, God's been talking about this. He's going to be bringing in people from all nations. So how do we go about it? Let's find a way forward. I appreciate their compromise there. It didn't make it always easy. And I'm sure on one side, Paul was maybe disappointed. On the other side, someone who was strong on maybe the circumcision camp was disappointed, but they were trying to push toward the big picture. And for us today, too, anytime there's change, and there's going to be anxiety, even if it's seemingly a small thing, there's always, what's this going to look like? How are we going to be? Is that going to change everything? So we've seen that, whether it's music or a council kind of structure, like you mentioned, or we're going to build a new building, brings up different things. So it's important for those in leadership to be able to step back and check their own anxiety, which we feel, trust me, in these things, and to lead, pointing to the bigger picture, you know, and of course, seeing God above this all, who is not anxious. Mm-hmm. He's not biting his nails, as we often say. He's above that all. So seeing that big picture, working together on it, remembering what we share, and communication, huge.
Yeah.
Right. Let's get together and talk about this. They did in Acts 15. Mm-hmm. Let's sit down. Let's hear from this group. Let's hear from that group. And that's huge, too. And I think we've tried to do that. Even you mentioned here, we had a whole conversation regarding women in church office, elders, deacons, pastors. And we tried to facilitate groups in the congregation just to even talk about it and share and listen to each other. I'm not saying we did it perfect, but that's trying to lean into that. Mm-hmm. When we don't talk, we just start leaning into that anxiety more and assuming things about each other.
Well, and assuming everything's a threat.
Yeah, exactly. Change quickly can become a threat, right?
Right, which actually kind of gets into my next question here, because sometimes this transition anxiety comes in under the guise of threat.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so we'll experience this transition, and it feels like a threat.
Sure.
Sometimes in completely innocuous ways. So, for example... I've said many times before, like, I did not come from a CRC background. I came from a Baptist background. And so when I came to Friendship, that was my very first time encountering infant baptism in person.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we were setting up for the service. We were getting ready for practice on a Wednesday night. And I was like, they're like, yeah, we're doing baptism. I was like, great. Where are we putting the tub?
Right.
And I was like, oh, right. We do it a little different here. But what was interesting for me is that, like, in the moment, that felt wrong. Because, like, really the only experience I had with it in the past was, oh, yeah, some people baptize babies, and it's mostly the Catholics, and they're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That was my high school education on how that worked.
Mm-hmm.
And now, obviously, like, I've come to realize, like, there is a lot of great purity and great intention. Like, I might still prefer immersion baptism of adults, but, like, I see what the CRC is doing with infant baptism, and I love that, and I see the joy and the hope and the community in that. But that was not my immediate reaction.
Sure.
My immediate gut reaction was, what mm-hmm. are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever we're challenged by someone else's interpretation of Scripture, how can we really recognize if we're responding to it as a threat rather than just a different interpretation? And then with that, how should we respond if two people who love Jesus wholeheartedly fundamentally disagree on how to live out life? What mm-hmm. do we do with that?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question and a good point that these categories, the transitions, turmoil, threats, they have overlap,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, a change in my life is probably threatening me with some sort of loss, at least on the surface. This is going to be different now. I always used to, you know, do things this way. And now that restaurant closed, where am I going to go on Monday morning? You know, that even just something like that. Like you said, seeing baptism, there's a sense of loss, even thinking, was I taught the wrong way? I've upheld maybe my parents or my leaders growing up. And if I suddenly think a different way, am I losing my respect or the height that I've placed them on in my life? And I think the first thing is to acknowledge that happens. You know, we deal with that. If there's change... that especially is something I learned from a young age, and someone saying, well, I don't agree with that. I think we should do it a different way. There's going to be some threat just because, especially if I value my family and upbringing, well, wait a sec. These people I love and respect taught me a different way. This is what I've known, as you pointed mm-hmm. out well. And so first and foremost, to know, we're going to have anxiety when those conversations come up. It's going to happen because... even if I'm not naming those things in my head, it's there.
It's there. Even if we don't realize, and I think a lot of the time, especially with that, we don't necessarily realize that we're...
No.
Like it does, it's...
No.
It just feels wrong. Why? Then we don't necessarily take the time to rationalize, okay, where is this coming from?
The interesting thing is if we talk to the people closest to us, they could probably name it right away. You know, Liz be like, oh, I know you're anxious because you started doing this.
Like, what? Danica has done that to me regularly where she's like... what's going on? And I'm like, nothing's going on. I'm fine.
Right.
Like, wait a second.
So sometimes we need to ask the people close to us, am I not being myself? Because they can recognize quickly when we are nervous or
and then
stressed.
When we do that, making sure we respond well. Right. Because if I go and ask Danica, hey, am I stressed? And she says, yes. I'm like, no, I'm not.
Right.
Then that's not
what's the point. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's good. So when you're thinking about, it's interesting you pointed to, like you said, you know, Christians living in fundamentally different ways. In some ways, I would say that's how we categorize it when we're anxious.
Okay.
We spread the gap. Hmm. We become like, and I think that's what we're seeing happen in our culture because we're more and more anxious as a culture. We make it like there's this massive divide between us. What if someone from outside would look like, what's the difference between you guys?
Right.
Even on like something like baptism, which is a sacrament important, but a lot of people would say like, what are you making such a big deal about it?
Right.
You serve the same Lord, right? If somebody, again, came in from a different religion, like they wouldn't define us differently. They're like, oh, they worship Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we tend to, in our anxiety, make a big deal of these differences and make it seem like, oh, we're living totally different lives. And it could be, yeah, I'm thinking about my interactions with people this way. You think about it this way. But it's both trying to have expressions of love. Mm-hmm. Coming out of my relationship to Jesus, both would probably say, this is how I'm trying to love my neighbor and love the Lord. And so we need to talk about it, because if we don't, again, that divide seems really big.
Yeah.
But maybe we could actually learn from each other. The best always comes when you and I, Austin, who are different people, come together and we can say, oh, what can I learn and what can I take? I don't have to change
Right. Maybe
my fundamentals and what makes me who I am, but I can learn.
And coming with an attitude that's like, yeah, I might just be coming to learn how someone else mm-hmm. does it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of the time, and you know, I had an apologetics course in high school. And I really appreciated that because I learned a lot about why I believe what I believe.
Mm.
But I feel like sometimes that may have pushed me in a direction where, as I was entering college, everything was, it was defensive. Everything had to be apologized in a way.
I hear what you're saying.
And I was there to convince people that my way was right and not really bother just learning from them. It was more about defending what I believed rather than having good introspection about, okay, why do I actually believe that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that attitude shift is really important as we do these.
And there's a space and a time for an apologetic discussion, but it's knowing the difference between what it is and not.
Right.
I found, and I'm still learning on this, trust me, that so many times people just want to be heard, you know, why they're doing what they're doing and what's behind it. And that's great learning for me. You know, I really appreciate when I'm looking at somebody and I'm thinking, what are they doing? Why are they doing this? Why are they pushing that thing? And then I hear maybe, oh, this is my background. And I say, that makes a lot of sense now.
Mm-hmm.
I know why this is important to you.
Yeah.
Maybe I still don't agree, but it's very helpful to me. I've made a connection with that person. I know where they're coming from. It's not just some evil, like, you're trying to blow up the whole church. They're trying to serve. They see things differently than me. All right, let's talk. You know, we're two people here.
Well, and I think maybe that also gets to earlier, you can tell if you're being anxiety-driven if you assume that this person just wants to cause chaos.
Yes.
Or that you assume that this person is trying intentionally to do something bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, no one's the bad guy in their mind. Everyone, you know, there might be one or two people who are like, yep, I'm just awful. But there's...
in our own minds.
In our own minds.
Yeah.
But there's probably very few people who genuinely are... intentionally trying to cause chaos.
Right. Right. And that's where we need each other too, because sometimes we are, but we're not trying to, but to realize out of our anxiety, hey, these actions are divisive.
Yes.
These actions are hurtful toward, you know, and that's, you know, I'm no different. Sometimes, and like you said, most of us have good intentions. We're trying to do this and we think it's important and we don't realize maybe we're steamrolling somebody. Mm. And or we're just being overly forceful. And especially in a role like mine, I have to be cautious because, you know, things I can kind of push things and have the opportunity to see them go through and to recognize, yeah, the church isn't mine, just like it's not anybody else's other than the Lord's.
Right.
So, yeah, there's good wisdom in that, too, recognizing my view of the people around me, especially those who maybe see things a bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
Will become more extreme the more anxious I am.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, so next week we're going to continue this series, and that is the segment on God's antidotes for anxiety, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what are we kind of looking at there?
Yeah, so it's kind of like, I'll probably use this example or something like it. You know, I've done some of these escape rooms before. Maybe you have too.
Oh, I love escape rooms.
And they put you in these rooms, and they're not easy, typically. But they give you everything you need to get out of there. And you got to kind of stumble around, and sometimes it's more clear than others. That kind of example, it's like, we're living in an anxious world, but God does give us what we need in order to walk through it. And it's not always easy. Sometimes it's frustrating.
Sometimes we get distracted by things that absolutely don't matter.
Right. And sometimes we're just refusing to see what God's given to us. We'll talk about that. But we use the three T's this week. This week will be three P's. And Philippians 4 brings this out. God gives us his presence. The Lord is near. He gives us prayer. And that's right after the anxiety piece, probably the one of the chief antidotes. And he also gives to us, I said presence, so peace. His peace. And that comes up at a couple different points in the chapter as well, this peace that guards us and transcends understanding. And so we'll kind of go into each of those and examine them and how that can be helpful to us. And so anyways, that's what we're looking for.
I'm so excited for that. I'm so excited to hear this escape room analogy because the last time I went in an escape room, it was space themed. And I definitely got very, I thought I was doing everything. I put on like a costume that I found there and was dancing in a corner because I just completely misread everything and spent like 20 minutes looking a little silly. And you know, I feel like that's definitely how a lot of us can be sometimes.
Yeah.
As we try and stumble our way out of anxiety.
Especially on our own.
Especially on our own. And well, that was part of the thing was I was not listening to my teammates. I was just like, I think this is what I'll do. And
right.
Oh, man. Anyways, thank you so much, Dan. I'm so excited for this. This series is actually something I'm really excited for. Listeners, some of you may know this, some of you may not. But this really cues up a new project that I'm really excited to start sharing with folks as we get closer to it. Later this spring, I'll be releasing a podcast series about how Christians can interact with politics in a way that is God-honoring, gives grace to the image of God in everyone, and allows us to live a life that is both politically connected and not anxiety-driven. Mm. And so I feel like the content in this series is really just teeing us up for having a great, you know, starting place where we're all coming from the same understanding. So I'm really excited for that. More details will be coming in the future. But for now, I just can't wait to keep learning about anxiety, learning how we can love Christ well and how he can help us with this anxiety. So Dan, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone who's listening. Go in peace, and we will be back next week.